Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have 51 degrees under overcast skies. Out at the airport, they are now showing 92% humidity. East winds to 7 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. Look, we're just a 30% chance of rain for the rest of the day, but rain is expected to begin about 10 p.m. tonight. That rain's expected to continue through about 10 a.m. Wednesday morning. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Karlik Tribal Council released a poster that went viral. An Arctic invasive species. There aren't many yet, but as things warm up, they're expecting more.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. On the eve of the NATO summit and pressure to let Sweden join, it now appears NATO member Turkey is a go. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan reportedly has agreed to drop Turkey's opposition, according to Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. He declined to say when Sweden's accession would be ratified by the Turkish parliament. NATO's annual summit formally opens tomorrow in the capital of Lithuania. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports on other major issues on the table.
Top on the list is Ukraine, and President Volodymyr Zelensky is expected to attend the summit and call for a clear roadmap for Ukraine to join NATO once the war is over. But Ukraine will not be the only issue on the table, says Martin Quincey of the German Marshall Fund.
Ukraine will be front and center, but there is also China. The Americans especially want to talk about the Chinese challenge to transatlantic security.
Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Vilnius.
In the lead-up to the summit, persistent concerns about the U.S.'s decision to supply cluster munitions for Ukraine's defense against Russia. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller spoke to reporters today about the Biden administration's decision to move forward with the weapons despite opposition from key allies and human rights groups.
Russia has been using cluster bombs since the outset of this war, cluster bombs with a high dud rate. So the Ukrainians are at some point going to have to conduct these demining operations.
Critics warn unexploded bomblets can seriously injure or kill civilians who may come in contact with them after a conflict has ended. Millions of people are under severe flood alerts across the Northeast because of slow-moving storms and flood-generating downpours. The National Weather Service warns in its forecast today the storms that began over the weekend and claimed at least one life would dump several more inches of rain in already inundated areas of the Northeast, that is. More than 1,000 flights, including those in and out of Boston and New York, were canceled or delayed today. From member station WAMC, Ian Pickus reports, New York officials say it could be weeks before roads that were washed out yesterday are fully repaired.
Intense rain has led to flooded roadways and millions of dollars in damage from New York's Hudson Valley to the North Country and Vermont. Governor Kathy Hochul spoke in hard-hit Highland Falls near West Point hours after the worst of it, when more than 12,000 utility customers lost power and one woman in Orange County died.
We can't turn our eyes any longer to the fact that we have to build up areas, homes and businesses that are in low-lying areas are going to need to be lifted up. Otherwise, we're ignoring the reality that flooding is part of life now here in the state of New York.
Hochul says it's a reminder that everybody should be prepared to respond at a moment's notice to dangerous floods. For NPR News, I'm Ian Pickus in Albany.
From Washington, this is NPR News. Larry Nassar, the former sports doctor serving time now for child pornography and sexual assault, was attacked in prison. Authorities in Florida say he is recovering after sustaining multiple stab wounds from another inmate yesterday afternoon, according to the Associated Press. Prison officials say no one else was injured. The FBI is investigating. Nassar is spending the rest of his life behind bars after he was found guilty of the sex crimes charges against him. Many female gymnasts, including Olympians, accused Nassar of sexually abusing them while they were his patients. The New York Times announced today that it would disband its legendary sports desk. The newspaper will instead rely on content from the sports news site The Athletic, which it acquired 18 months ago. NPR's David Folkenflik reports sports journalists at The Times had demanded clarity on their status just a day ago.
In recent years, sports coverage at The Times, as at many newspapers, has come under unrelenting competition from ESPN and other sports news networks. They've been joined by social media outlets and podcasts and other platforms streaming all kinds of fan-driven content. The Times had essentially withdrawn from doing daily coverage of games and then retreated covering major sports in all but an episodic way, focusing on enterprise reporting, investigations, and profiles. The Times says it'll continue those. The paper paid $500 million for The Athletic. It has a different style and feel, often with a fan-focused approach. The Athletic is still losing money, but the site has tripled its subscriber base in just a year. David Folkenflik, NPR News.
The Dow's closed up 175 points. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Plymouth Gin Distillery. Plymouth Gin is imported from England's southwest coast, distilled using a blend of 7 botanicals, including juniper berry, coriander seed, and citrus peel. Plymouth Gin since 1793.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Alaska State Troopers have confirmed the names of passengers who died on the plane crash near the village of Old Harbor over the 4th of July weekend. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports.
Longtime Kodiak resident Rod Murdoch, who was 73, and 91-year-old Byron Chitwood died in the crash, according to troopers. The Piper Cherokee went down just north of Old Harbor about 6 minutes into the flight. Chitwood was from Texas. He was the mayor of Greenville outside of Dallas in the early 2000s. Greenville's local newspaper, the Herald Banner, reported Thursday that Chitwood's two adult sons were also on board the plane and injured in the crash. Family members told the paper they were on an annual fishing trip to Alaska. Murdoch lived in Kodiak for more than 3 decades. He owned Alpha Appliance Repair with his family. There is a celebration of life planned for Murdoch at the covered picnic area of Kodiak's Fort Abercrombie State Park on Monday, starting at noon. His family says anyone who knew him is welcome to bring a dish and an instrument and share a memory. The National Transportation Safety Board is still investigating the cause of the crash. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
Fishing, camping, kayaking, and a year of all-expenses-paid living. That's from a poster issued by the Karlik Tribal Council that went viral last week. They're looking to pay 2 families with 4 children each to move to the village in an effort to get state funding and reestablish a school. As KMXT's Brian Venois reports, since then the tribe has received thousands of inquiries from around the world.
Within a week, between 4,000 and 5,000 people responded to the poster. Catherine Reft is the Karlik Tribal Council's secretary and treasurer. She says they never could have anticipated the response.
We just figured we'd try to do something like this just to see if we'd get any kind of attention. We never knew it was going to blow up to be this huge.
The native village of Karlik is on the southwest end of Kodiak Island. The village has less than 50 year-round residents. There's 2 children there now, but villages need at least 10 students in order for the state of Alaska to fund a school. That's why the tribe is looking for 2 families with 4 children each to move there. Reft says the remote village has been looking to grow for a while now.
We had our feelers out there. We tried going through agencies, and we just couldn't find any interest. And then somebody brought up, why don't we get a poster out there? And that's what we did.
The tribe has heard from families across the country, as far as Florida, and even internationally from Canada and the Philippines about its ad.
Our main focus right now is to have the 10 students here in Karlik.
Karlik's school closed back in 2018 due to low enrollment and continued to dwindle since. The Kodiak Island Borough has kept maintaining the former school building by paying for its heat and electricity. Borough staff recently visited the building to assess its condition, and with minor maintenance, it could reopen and host classes again. In order to get more students, the tribe is willing to pay housing, utilities, moving expenses, and even a food stipend for a full year. For the right family, they'll also train them for jobs to become a more permanent fixture in the community. Cindy Mika is the Kodiak Island Borough School District Superintendent. She says the district was caught off guard by the poster, but is open to helping the village.
If they make those 10 students, then, you know, we'll have to do something. But, you know, at this point, it's going to be very difficult staffing it at this late of a date. And it's not part of this budget at all.
KIBSD struggled to fill rural positions last year and faced huge budget cuts last month. Mika says she understands the struggle Karlik is facing without a school.
I know that the villages need schools and that the schools are what makes them be able to grow in population. It's really hard to grow if you don't have a school for your students or your children out there.
The clock is ticking, though. The state counts student populations for schools in October. Reft, the tribe's secretary and treasurer, says they hope to bring new families soon.
We're going to try to get families here before the end of August, before the school year, have them settled in their house and ready for school.
The tribal council will start looking over applications next week. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
After a fire closed a fuel dock in the Whittier Harbor this week, city officials say it's operational again. The fire started last Tuesday, sinking a boat and forcing two people to be medevaced out of the area with injuries. It also resulted in the closure of the dock, which is the only refueling station for many vessels. And it occurred right before a 36-hour commercial fishing opening in the Prince William Sound on Wednesday. Whittier Harbor Master David Borg says time was of the essence to get the dock ready for fueling.
We knew we had about a 30-hour window to get fuel back down to the dock, just based on the fact that when that 36-hour opener shut down, we would have the fleet coming back to Whittier to offload, and they take that opportunity to refuel and resupply with food and so forth.
Borg says Shoreside Petroleum, the operator of the dock, was able to salvage the sunken boat and sent a fuel truck to the area on Wednesday.
And then they ran a diesel and a gasoline hose down off of that truck to the fuel dock, the portions that weren't affected by the fire. So they were able to service relatively the entire fleet pretty efficiently.
Borg says Shoreside has restored about 50% of the dock and anticipates fully restoring lost fuel pumps by next Friday. Borg commented that the, quote, Herculean effort taken on by Shoreside to get the dock operational was impressive. At this point, it's unclear what started the fire, but Borg has a few ideas. He said the vessel that caught fire had just been fueled up.
It could have been an ignition situation. It could have been an electrical short. It could have been fuel fumes built up in the bilge area, and the vessel, maybe the blower wasn't effective enough as it should have been. And when the vessel was started, it could have ignited those fumes that were in the bilge system.
While the weather hasn't been great in the area, Borg says from what he's seen on incoming vessels, it's looking like a pretty good fishing season in Prince William Sound. Temperatures are heating up and more visitors are traveling or moving to Northwest Alaska, but not all of them are welcome. Some of them are invasive species. As KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports, while the Arctic is largely untouched by these ecological threats, climate change and development could easily help invasives gain a foothold.
In a short time, invasive species can permanently change an ecosystem's flora and fauna, displacing key species and subsistence food sources. Right now, the fragile Arctic ecosystem is mostly free from some of the more devastating invasives, but that doesn't mean they are not a threat. That's according to Katie Spellman, a research associate and professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Right now, most of the plants that are in the tundra-dominated ecosystems of Alaska are the lesser threatening species. It is one of the few places on Earth where the really threatening species are not there yet.
However, plants like Elodia, if introduced, could decimate subsistence staples. The aquatic freshwater plant is commonly used as an ornamental in aquariums. If introduced to the wild, it can quickly overtake salmon, whitefish, or grayling spawning grounds. Spellman says Arctic ecosystems, including the plants and animals harvested for traditional food, can be particularly vulnerable.
We don't want our foods to be affected. They're already going through a lot with climate change, and so this is like icing on the cake, you know?
Once established, the fast-growing Elodia blocks light, choking other plants, creating what's called a monoculture. That's where a single plant or organism dominates the environment. Spellman says Elodia can make bodies of water difficult for native fish and other aquatic organisms to survive. It's identified by densely packed leaves in whorls of three or four, along long, slender, and sometimes branched stems. In Alaska, Elodia has been found as far north as Fairbanks. But Spellman says without education and as Arctic temperatures warm, if introduced, Elodia could easily clog waterways, suffocating aquatic environments.
The marine species, they can travel really quickly, especially hitchhiking on boats and in the ballast water of boats.
She says Elodia can also be spread by float planes. Statewide, scientists have been on high alert for another aquatic invader, European green crabs, which can also be carried in the bilge systems of boats. The invasive crabs were discovered for the first time in Alaska in the southeast community of Metlakatla last summer. But Spellman says the crabs are also a threat to the colder waters in western Alaska. Since most of rural Alaska is unconnected by roads, boats are one of the main methods for invasives to travel. Some are hitching rides in the boats themselves, inside barges or shipping containers.
Rats are really good at getting on boats and getting to places like St. Paul Island, found a rat in the past, and they, you know, set off the alarm bells because rats are a real threat to seabird populations.
Even smaller invaders can infiltrate. Invasive seeds and plant matter often hide inside equipment, and as the summer building season commences, Spellman says it's important to be diligent about cleaning transported materials.
You're going to get something on a barge. You're going to get a heavy machinery on a barge. Let's make sure that those tires are clean, you know, and it's not bringing in bad plant material from Anchorage area.
Along with equipment, Spellman says materials for large infrastructure projects should be looked over and scrutinized.
Anytime you're transporting material like soil, gravel, hay, you have potential for bringing in new plant pathogens or insects that aren't native to the area.
The Alaska Invasive Species Partnership, a volunteer organization of people concerned about invasives, recommends using certified weed-free gravel and hay, especially for larger infrastructure or road projects. Spellman says roadwork and construction is one of the main vectors or methods for spreading harmful plants.
New roadwork has done a lot to spread some of the invasives into places that they hadn't been in the past.
Spellman does have a few recommendations for combating invasives.
Paying attention to the plants and animals around you that you see and submitting reports if you see something unusual.
If you see a suspicious plant or animal, you can call the invasive species hotline at 1-877-INVASIV. That number is 1-877-468-2748. You can learn more about the Alaska Invasive Species Partnership at alaskainvasives.org. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. GCI is a participant in the Affordable Connectivity Program, providing qualifying Alaska households entry-level broadband internet. More information at gci.com/acp.
Federal Reserve officials will have a lot to say this week. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. A number of Fed policymakers are scheduled to make public statements this week until the weekend when they enter the bank's quiet period ahead of its next policy meeting. That's when the Fed is widely expected to raise its benchmark interest rate by a quarter point. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen returns from China with the promise of better dialogue over economic issues. Yellen told Marketplace she reassured Chinese leaders that the U.S. will listen to concerns about economic harm from trade policies imposed by the White House. President Biden is in Europe for a meeting of NATO leaders starting tomorrow. U.S. allies are expected to announce that they will spend more on defense. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 10th day of July, the year 2023. Sun rose today at 5:24. It will set again at 11:04, giving us 17 hours and 40 minutes of daylight. That would be a loss of 2 minutes and 33 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 80 degrees, set in 1976, and a record low was 37, set in 1966. Currently 51 degrees under overcast skies. They are reporting 10 miles of visibility at the airport again. The Weather Service is calling for a 30% chance of rain for the rest of the day with cloudy skies and a high near 56 with southeast winds to 5. They're expecting the rain to begin tonight sometime after 10 p.m. and continue through tomorrow and into about Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. After that, though, it's going to be replaced by a chance of showers, and they're even calling for mostly sunny skies for Thursday. Looking at our local tides, we have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide here on the east side will be at 2:11 this afternoon, be 1 foot, followed by a high tide at 8:55 p.m., of 8.2 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 2:52 this afternoon and be 2.4 feet, followed by a high tide at 9:21 p.m. of 13.3 feet in Larsen Bay.
Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 15, issued 10 a.m. July 10th. There will be a 48-hour extension of the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th, until 9 p.m. Wednesday, July 12th, in the following areas: the Duck Bay and Iziut Bay sections of the Afognak District. As previously announced, the following areas will close at 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th: the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Northwest Kodiak District, except Kujuyak Bay remains closed, Northeast Kodiak District, except Buskin River remains closed, Eastside Kodiak District, except Passaic Bay remains closed, the Afognak District, except Inner and Outer Katoy Bay, remain closed, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Until further notice, in that portion of Northwest Kodiak and Southwest Kodiak districts, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial salmon fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Concerning North Shelikof Strait fishery, short notice in-period closures may occur for seine fishery in the seaward zones of the North Shelikof Strait area, which includes also Cape Igvec section, as designated in the North Shelikof Strait Sockeye Salmon Management Plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., 8 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. Closed waters adjustments. Closed waters for Sultry Creek are the normal closed waters as described in regulation until 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th. Closed waters are currently reduced until 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th in the Fowl Bay to stream terminus of Hidden Lake Creek and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus of Little Waterfall Creek and to the stream terminus of Big Waterfall Creek. Cost recovery fisheries have begun in Spiriton Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Spiriton Bay Special Harvest Area will remain closed to common property fishing. Any fishing opportunities there will depend on the ability to meet KRA cost recovery needs. Cost recovery info can be obtained by calling 486-6559. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area stat charts and detailed in the commercial salmon fishing regs. Stat charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And as always, recent salmon fishery announcement information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559.
The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Tuesday, July 11th at 5:30 p.m., the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having its meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. On Wednesday, July 12th, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m., and on Thursday, July 13th, the Assembly will be having a work session in the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office with questions at 907-486-9310. And remember, Assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. If you subscribe, they will send you live-stream notifications. A celebration of a life well lived for Rod Murdoch is being held now at the Fort Abercrombie Covered Picnic Area. The family invites all who knew Rod to celebrate the extraordinary life of a wonderful father, husband, brother, friend, and fix-it guy extraordinaire. Bring a dish to share, a story about Rod, and your favorite musical instrument. All are welcome. Rod's family is there now, and they will be there until the cows come home. Nominating petitions for 1 2-year city mayor seat and 2 3-year city council seats are now available at the Kodiak City Clerk's office. For additional information, call the city clerk at 907-486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.